And now, after years of planning, sweating, and going broke, here is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
And it left the media.
Why they would give this man a podcast is anyone's guess.
And there is what could only be a bizarre coincidence or something else.
Welcome to the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Trapped, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Country music and fine moonshine. Finally, a podcast that lets it all hang out.
Let's level with America.
Got your boots? Ready for some whiskey?
These boots are made for walking.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
And now, the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Hey, everyone. Jim here, Boots and Whiskey Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have, I would say, somebody who has a much bigger storied career than maybe this show deserves. We're kind of like that run-of-the-mill, shoot-the-shit kind of show. And trust me, we get that with our guest today, who is Skip Ewing, if you haven't read the title of the episode. But Skip here, if you don't know anything about Skip Ewing, first of all, welcome to country music. Second of all, I can see why you may not, because Skip is one of the most prolific songwriters of the last, 30, 40 years. Not to put an age on Skip or anything, but he's had cuts with some of the greatest and some of the most recent country acts you could think of. Ernest has a tune that has just come out that Skip wrote. God, I think he said back in the 80s. We talked about it in the episode. I don't re-listen to them after they're recorded. I apologize. But yeah, he's been on the Opry. He's done it, you guys. Like, this is a conversation that, honestly, I cut short at the end because I was exhausted. And not because of Skip. It was just a long freaking day that day. And I could have talked for hours with this dude because he is so fascinating. So, there's so many questions I still have. But you know what? It just gives me an excuse to have him back on, right? So enough of that. Kick back, relax, enjoy the show. We thank you for being here. If it is your first time, welcome to the jungle. It is a shit show of a circus here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. There is no rhyme or reason to this show. We just have a great time and get great guests. So thanks, Skip, for coming on. Check us out on our socials, Boots and Whiskey Podcast on all social media, and then it's bootsandwhiskeyentertainment.com is the website. It is a work in progress. Actually, I've been working my ass off on the website at night here the last few days. There's more to come. And I want to just formally welcome Justin Lawson, our new concert photographer here to the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. So welcome, Justin. And then CeCe. He is our concert reviewer, our other concert reviewer, I should say. So big shout out to those guys. Thanks for being here, gentlemen. If you or somebody you know wants to, write or do reviews or anything like that, please, by all means, shoot me a DM, shoot me a email, whatever. The more the merrier on this team. Let's grow it up. What do we got going on? Not much. We don't have anything going on. Nothing coming up. So, again, thanks for being here. Thanks for coming on, Skip. And guys, enjoy the show. I just rambled for the last minute, so don't mind me. Enjoy the show. It's been another long day here, but it's Tuesday that this comes out. I'm recording this portion of it on Monday, and I've been nonstop since I woke up. So thanks, everyone. Not that you needed to know any of that. But anyway, enjoy the show, and we'll chat on the opposite end of the conversation. Enjoy, guys. Cheers. We want to give a big thank you to our friends over at Off the Rails here in Worcester, Massachusetts. You can find them at offtherailsworcester.com. They have a great restaurant, a great music venue. They have everything you would want to feel like in Nashville right here in Central Mass. If you're ever in the area, check out the restaurant, check out the music venue. Again, offtherailsworcester.com, 90 Commercial Street, Worcester. Check them out.
Hey, Skip. Hello?
Hey, honey.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Where?
I hear a voice from over there. Is it your headphones?
Are my headphones connected? Excuse me.
Maybe they are.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Ah, okay, good. Yeah, my I had a set of AirPods, the Max ones that are like over your ears, and it connected to my phone automatically. Because I was just nearby, I guess. So that works out.
Technology is a hell of a thing, huh?
Oh man, love it and hate it, right?
Oh my God, it's the best thing and the worst thing all at the same time.
You know, I kind of think about that the same way as I do water and fire.
Yeah,
because, you know, enough, the right amount of water, the right amount of fire, and the right amount of technology, awesome.
Yeah.
Too little or too much, and it's terrible.
Yeah, true. Wow. Yeah. That is actually, wow, spot on. Holy shit.
Huh.
Well, thanks for being on, man.
Yeah, I'm happy. Have we started the recording for the podcast yet?
Oh, yeah, it's been recording for a while. We'll edit out the beginning and all the headphone
fiasco.
So I don't know how much you know about what we do here, but I'm going to let you tell your story because I think it's an interesting one, and I'm going to jump in along the way, and you know, we're gonna dig deep into the world of Skip Ewing, that's for sure.
Awesome. And you know what happened is I know it's Boots and Whiskey, but I didn't meet you yet. So I'd love, I like to do that.
well, I'm Jim. It's
Jim. Nice to meet you.
You know, it's funny. Like nobody seems to like call me by name. And I kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if I do it on purpose, but you know, it's an interesting thing.
I like to do that.
Yeah.
I like to know who I'm talking to, man.
It's great. I appreciate it because not many people, I don't want to say they don't care, but I don't think they just, you know, realize that, that there's an actual person, you know, behind all of this.
Fair enough.
So yeah, you know, tell us who you are, what you've done, because you've done a lot in, you know, kind of, you know, your career, which has been, you know, really incredible.
Well, nope, do you want? Sure. I mean, I can start wherever yeah. You want.
You start wherever you want. I mean, it's your life.
Okay. Well, as we're talking, you know, I now live in Wyoming.
Okay.
In the northwest corner of Wyoming with my wife Linda and all of our four-legged friends that are part of our family, and the journey here was pretty long and fruitful and difficult and adventurous. And so I'll kind of skip past my start of music, but basically, you know, I started playing guitar when I was 4 years old. I don't remember asking for one, but they said I did. So I never remember a time I wasn't playing guitar. And as I was playing guitar, I was pretty young, I'd get in trouble if I was playing guitar at night and when I was supposed to be asleep. So I took a foam curler, one of those pink foam curlers that women wear, and I stuck it down underneath my strings all the way down to the bridge, and it would mute all the strings so I could play. But I had to make stuff up because I didn't have a lot of lessons, you know, and that was a natural step to start making up stuff, songs that I could sing. I mean, I learned a lot of other songs, a lot of James Taylor and Merle Haggard and a lot of stuff. classical music, The Police, Genesis, you know, and I just loved it. And it just kept going. I learned a bunch more instruments, and then I never set out to say I'm going to be a country music, you know, recording artist, a star, or I was going to be a country songwriter. I just going to follow the music and do what I loved. And
yeah.
I got offered a job in Nashville right out of high school. And I hitched a ride with somebody who was going to Nashville that I'd never met with my guitar, my banjo, and I don't know, a few shirts and some jeans. And that was it. And I never looked back. And then when I got to Nashville, I had a job as a ensemble singer. That's what I got offered. And as I was doing, you know, doing these country shows, I would sit in the back in the trailer and work on songs that I was writing and share it if people wanted to hear it. And anyway, word kind of got around that I was writing some good songs. And then I got invited to a writer's night, which is basically, you know, a writer will come out and play a couple songs and the next writer, and or they'll do it in the round where one writer sings and the next one, the next one, the next one.
Sure.
And I got offered a publishing deal basically that night. They just came up to me and said, "We want to talk to you about a publishing deal. Would you like that?" I was like, "Oh, sure. Yeah." And so I signed with the same company that had Hank Williams's catalog and Roy Orbison's catalog. That means all of the songs that they had. And that was in Acuff Rose's catalog. I started writing for them. And very shortly after that, I got my first recording was George Jones cut one of my songs. And it was pretty, I was freaked out, you know.
Dude, I'm freaked out just hearing it. I can only imagine living it.
It's wicked, man, I'm telling you. And so, you know, I just followed it. I was learning from some of the people I was writing with. I just tried to soak up as much knowledge as I could. And then all I was ever about and still am about is sharing whatever I have to share as honestly as I know how to share it in order to connect with people in a way that's, you know, sometimes unfathomable music is. And so after I got a few more recordings, and I mean, it was, you know, it was George Strait and George Jones and Reba McEntire and Al, just a bunch. And so MCA asked me if I wanted to make a record. I said, sure. We made a record called The Coast of Colorado with songs that I'd written. And I want to say it had five, I think they were top 20, all of them. All five singles were top 20. A couple went up in the top 10, top five, and it did well. And then in the next record, it kind of just went a little bit sideways.
Mm.
And you said your name was Jim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jim, it was like suddenly, the first record did pretty well. And I came in and played some songs, and the same producer just, I mean, ripped me up. He just like, and said, if you would just play me something that would be a hit on country radio, play me something that country radio will play instead of this crap, which he used worse language than that. He said, maybe we'd have a hit together. Otherwise, no.
And so, do you mind if I stop you right there?
Well, let me tell you, just so, right, yes, you ahead. Can stop me. I just got to tell you the last little bit of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That day, the song that I had just played him, that he told me was crap, that wouldn't get played on the radio, because I didn't cut it, Colin Ray wanted to cut it. It was a song called Love Me, a song about the grandmother and the grandfather. If you get there before I do, don't give up on me. It was nominated for Song of the Year, sold his album platinum. It's been played millions and millions of times on the radio. And of course, it didn't happen when I was going to cut the record. But that's how that's the first into Nashville, and then we can go from that. And I said, you wanted to ask me a question.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking about it, you know, you have, you're writing these songs and you're getting these cuts with, you know, absolute nobodies in the country music world, right? you know, and then you put out a record that, you know, does fairly well, you know, after that second one that didn't do, you know, didn't do what the first one does, do you stop and go, oh shit, I made a mistake here?
Well, this is the difficulty with it, Jim. And it's horrible that I made the mistake, but the mistake I made then was trying to please the wrong people.
Yeah.
And I tried to please the people who were in charge. And remember, I had just played my producer, Love Me, and was told that's not a hit. We don't want anything to do with it. You can't record that. Write me this kind of stuff.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, I don't understand, because the first record we did was, you know, it had some stuff I really liked. And, you know, I had Gospel According to Luke, and the song It's You Again on the second record, the up-tempo, that did really well. But they wouldn't let me record what I wanted to. And the next thing you know, they're telling me to dress different. I'm getting asked to, it felt awkward. And,
right.
You know, and so basically I still tried to make some records, but I was still trying to please the wrong people, and the songs that I wanted to cut, still, they didn't want me to cut. And those were the hits. Some of them were the hits, you know? And I'm like, okay. So ultimately, if I'm just, you know, transparent, ultimately I went, I can't make a living, you know, doing this. So I was making it more money as a writer, and I just focused on writing. And then wrote some of the songs that I believe in, songs like the Diamond Rio hit, I Believe, the first three number ones for Brian White, which was Someone Else's Star, and Rebecca Lynn, and I'm Not Supposed to Love You Anymore, and Something That We Do for Clint Black. These are all number one records. And I wrote for a while, for a good while in Nashville, and I did, you know, I did pretty well. And it got to a place where I kept going, now the songs that I really wanted to write, once again, was not there, you know, it wasn't what radio wanted. And I was discouraged. I reached out kind of soulfully, and I dug deep into what that was, and it felt like my sort of artistic soul was being eroded, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Little by little. And so I had been coming to Wyoming, and started in the summer. I brought my daughter here to ride horses, to ride at a really good program. She was at the time, you know, single digits, you know, and I wanted her to be able to have an experience with horses like I had when I was young. My grandfather was a thoroughbred rancher, so I had some experiences, but I didn't get to ride. I got to care for them at the time. And I kept coming to Wyoming, and the more I did, the more I knew I wanted to be here, and the more I fell in love with horses. And don't get me wrong, I mean that I really dug deep into how a horse is put together, like what it's showing me that I'm not seeing. And suddenly, it was a spiritual journey for me with horses, because it caused me to dig deep in the places where I had the most to learn, I had the most to grow. And it was inspirational. And because I was kind of artistically unfulfilled, and just, I sold everything in Nashville, everything, except some art and my instruments. And I left Nashville and I went to study horsemanship.
Wow.
It doesn't mean I left all of the music behind. I mean, I still would play, but I would go and work places where they didn't know what I did. Nobody there knew that I had hit songs or sang music or anything, because I was focusing on how could I grow as a human? How could I be a better person, a better man, a better friend, a better partner for the horse and for other people. And ultimately, Jim, what that did for me is it inspired me to call myself out and go, okay, wow, I can do that better. I can do this better. And as I was working with horses, I worked on understanding an animal who experiences the world completely differently than we do.
Mm.
You know, we're predators and they're fight or flight. We have binocular vision. They have monocular vision. So if I'm on the horse's left side and I work with him with something, I've got to go on the right side and teach it to him again, so he understands it on both sides. And the more I did that, the more I just kept working on, wow, what have I not looked deeply into, and how can I be more present? So this became something that had to do with music. By the time I met my wife in Texas, I was down there at a clinic, and then I started traveling to do clinics with some wonderful horsemen that I got to learn from. And as that progressed, and I met my wife, and we just made a big change. She was going to take, she's a wonderful photographer and a videographer. And we were going, she got an offer in Houston that made pretty good money, because as you know, there's not a heck of a lot of money working horses. You know, it's incredible, but it's not something you're going to get really rich from unless, you know, you're one of the few. And I wasn't one of, I'm not one of the few standouts, like, you know, folks like Chris Cox and those kinds of horsemen. Although I've met them and worked with a bunch of them. I spent a lot of time with Mark Rashid, but I did learn a lot. And then, but I said to my wife, I know you got offered this job in Houston, and I know it's pretty good money, but if we go to Houston, we're going to live in the cement part of Houston. And I really like Houston. I love playing in Houston. I love visiting Houston. And if we lived outside the city a good ways, it could have been cool, but she wouldn't have been able to do what she was going to do. And because of her incredible spirit, I said to her, can we just go to this incredible place? I know it's called Du Bois in northwestern Wyoming. It's if you think about the Grand Tetons and you think about Yellowstone National Park, that's the kind of area that it is.
Okay.
And I said, would you just go on faith to see? And if it doesn't pan out, then we'll do what we need to do.
With keeping that Central Mass vibe going, we have to thank our friends over at the DCU Center, again, here in Worcester, dcucenter.com. They are the premier venue here in Central Massachusetts. They are a mid-size arena. They're the home of the Worcester Railers, the Massachusetts Pirates, numerous concerts, numerous events. Check them out, dcucenter.com. They are at 50 Foster Street, right here in Worcester. Cheers.
So we came to Du Bois. We put everything in a storage unit down in Texas. Well, there wasn't that much, you know.
Right.
We put it in a storage unit in Texas, and drove from Texas to Wyoming. And within a week, I think it was within a week, she got offered a job as a videographer for a television show here. Chris Cox, the guy I talked about, very good horseman. He has his own show on RFD TV, and she was shooting that for him. And she spent a good bit of time on the other side from where I was caretaking the property. I lucked into someone who knew what I did. And I said, well, could you caretake this ranch for us? And I came up here and looked at it, and it's stunning. It's like an amazing historical ranch that we live on. I was supposed to stay for 3 months, you know, 3 or 4 months, and it's been 5 years, and we're still in the same place because the people who own this ranch, many millions of dollars ranch, loves having us here. And while my wife was working at the ranch, I was caretaking this property and spending a bunch of time with an old classical guitar, the same old classical guitar that I bought from someone for $90 when I was an ensemble singer. when I first went to Nashville. I still have that guitar. I've written almost every hit I've ever written on it. And I played it and played it, and I started writing some things that were just coming to me inspired by Wyoming, not necessarily about Wyoming. Mm-hmm. For the first record. Now, the first record we cut was Wyoming, and I played them for her, and she said, God, my wife is amazing. But she said, honey, I think it's time to put the journeys together. She said, you never wanted to leave music behind. You just didn't have a way to do it. And I know you said for me to tell my story, it feels a little awkward to talk so much without you talking. So please tell me.
No.
Please tell me if you heard. Okay.
Like, yeah, I'm awful because like I'm sitting here just enthralled like at the conversation because I love talking to people that have like a story to tell, you know, where, you know, like my idea of where your story is going is like probably way different than what it actually is. And that makes me excited. You know, you know, I'm a big, you know, I love the story, you know what I mean? And I think that's why I have fallen in love with country music so much, because, you know, that's what it is. It's a story.
Sure.
You know, and it's so fascinating to me, like, you know, even talking to you about, you know, your journey, you know, and how different it is to other people, and, you know, you're still able to, you know, be successful and do what you love to do, music or not, even with the career you had, you know, it's just like, wow.
It is wow. Sometimes I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So being out in Wyoming, right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is it fair to say I don't want to say trying, because I mean, you know, with all the success you've had, but are you finding that it's easier, harder, and different to, you know, reacclimate yourself to the country music world, being, you know, I don't want to say being out of it, but being, you know, away from the glitz and the glamour from it from all this mm-hmm. time?
Well, yes and no, because we make assumptions. I'm not trying. I didn't set out to try to do that. Once again, I would be trying to please a genre.
Right.
And for instance, I don't have a major record label behind me that can put $1 million in the promotion of a single.
Mm.
And you know, they wouldn't invest in me. I'm not, you know, 25. But what I believe in is that people still listen. And what I'm finding is, as people are listening, they are discovering something different.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily, do I have to say it's country? Well, for me it is. There's a, you know, if you talk about the genre now, people are, they say lots of things about, you know, the country genre isn't country. I wrote several songs for Kenny Rogers, for instance, and he told me one time that he thought country music was what country people listen to. And I don't think that's the case. I think the genre is growing towards wherever it can stay alive. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I don't think we should find fault with that. If it's a younger demographic and those are the people who are spending money on albums and streaming and buying concert tickets and t-shirts, that's why artists have careers now. That's right. What's call it country or not. But for me, I told my wife, I said, man, if I jump back into this, it is going to be it's going to be hard, and it's going to be consuming, and it's going to take all of our resources. This is not this is not an easy venture. She said, well, honey, it's just that you write, you know, it's hard for me to it's nice that she would say things like this. It's hard for me to say when I get compliments, and I appreciate them, but she said, you just have a way that is different than anyone else. And if people listen, they will find. And, you know, I like to write with a lot of lyrical depth and with poeticism and a way for, if you listen to the song once, and then go back and listen again, I'm hoping that you find something else.
Yeah.
I'm saying I can write that way. Not everybody can. I am not chasing a hit for Kenny Chesney. I've written several things for Kenny Chesney and with Kenny Chesney, but I'm not Kenny Chesney, you know?
Right.
So I'm not going to write, I don't want to write a Kenny Chesney song. I've written all these new songs by myself. And the way it came about is after I had three or four songs written, and the Wyoming album is called Wyoming because of a song named Wyoming, but it's not about the state. It's about a journey of self-discovery and mistakes and in love and the belief that it's still possible. And, you know, for me to pick up everything and plant my roots here, some people didn't want me to do that. You know, they didn't want me to do that. But what's crazy is I said to my wife, you know who needs to record this with me? You know who needs to produce this with me? Is Kyle Lenning. Now, Kyle Lenning is one of the greatest producers in country music ever. But he didn't just do country music. I mean, he did, you know, England Dan and John Ford Coley hits and everything Randy Travis did in the first part of his career. And he was responsible for a lot of the things around the Brian White cuts because he was running that label. I called him out of the blue. And I said, I don't know why I know this, but I think we're supposed to do this record together. I said, would you listen to a few songs? All I did was, Jim, all I did was turn on my cell, you know, on the little like voice memo.
Yeah.
And played my guitar and sang them right there. That's all I did. Don't have a studio out here. Don't have anything like that out here. We live in a super small place. And I said, if you like that, then let's cut a record. And if you don't, I understand. And, you know, he was at a place in his career where he said, you know, he doesn't have a lot of time and he's committed to a lot of projects. And he said, it's got to be something that he thinks is really for him, that he really believes in. Well, he called me back about an hour later and said, when do you want to record? And so we made an album. Ultimately, I wrote 12 songs for this album and we made an album called Wyoming and had an amazing studio experience. That's a story all in itself. And our relationship, mine and Kyle's, is one of the best that either of us have ever had from a creative standpoint. The greatest musicians in the world came and played. This is not a joke. The greatest musicians in the world, some of them, came to play and wanted to play. And we made a very unique, a really unique record that got a lot of critical praise. I mean, American Songwriter, that when they wrote the Wyoming album, they said that it was a mystical masterpiece of an album. I like basically fell down. I'm like, how did people, wow. I mean, all right. Did everybody, you know, jump up and down in Nashville and go, man, this is amazing. No, it came out during COVID.
Yeah.
And we lost a whole year of time for it to be new. And plus I couldn't afford a marketing company and a lot of, you know, press. And I just had to put it out on my own. Well, people did find out. Then I got asked to do a syndicated national television special for PBS. And I brought musicians from Nashville that I knew and two that I didn't know. And we did part of a rehearsal because the planes were late and we shot this television show and it was so fun. And that sort of opened the door. And then people started discovering the Wyoming record and going, wait a minute, this isn't like the radio. There's a lot here. And that brought me a lot of joy. And so we kept on and said, okay, well, maybe this is a good start because the feedback we're getting is really positive, even though people haven't discovered. And I'm going to pause here, Jim, and tell you that that's why I'm so happy that, you know, programming and you know, DJs and all kinds of interviewers and podcasters like yourself, I get a chance to talk about this and maybe some folks discover what I do. you know, and they'll go and listen to a song like Railroad and go, whoa, that's different. Or go and listen to a song like Petroglyph. Petroglyph is a song on the Wyoming record. It's literally a petroglyph, you know, as a carving in the rock.
Mm.
And that song, for instance, is as much about nuclear war as it is about the loss of any kind of indigenous people. And it's a rock carving that tells the story of being of how it was made, basically. But that's a really shallow way to say that. That's the only thing I could say. Go listen to it. We got to do something musically different. And we play it in concert, even acoustically. But I would have never gotten to record that ever if it hadn't, you know, been for Kyle. And Kyle just, he's like I said, he's an amazing producer. And yeah, if we had more time, I could, you know, tell you a lot of what we did in the studio. But we made the record. We made a Christmas album, recorded some Christmas music because we could, to span the gap from COVID until now. And we have slowly put singles out from this new album that's coming out, the Road to California album. Slowly put some music out from that. It comes out on April 26th now. And once again, it has a pretty dynamic range of music. And I do. I get to be a recording artist. I get to offer something that I really believe in, that I think does have some depth and some merit and some authenticity and some musicality, even musical changes that aren't typical at all for musicians to hear.
Now, would you say that the album that's about to be released, is this the best work you've ever done?
The thing is that there's an old saying that, like, a songwriter's favorite song is the one he just wrote.
Right.
You know, and so it's in a way, it's not for me to say that. In a way, it's for those who listen to say that.
Yeah.
And they're always going to have an opinion.
Sure.
But I'm not making the music that I made when I did my first record. I mean, I think I've matured as a human, as a soul walking the earth. I think listeners differently. I've had a lot more time with music and guitars and practice and digging into the art of poetry and lyrics and music that pushes the envelope. I don't want to do what's already done. I don't even want to do what people are expecting, if they're expecting it to be on country radio. They want me to emulate what's on country radio, because I literally can't.
Right.
You know, I couldn't, I don't have a budget for that kind of album. And and if I tried to write that for that reason, it's not that I don't think I could write a hit. Of course I could. Of course, and I used to co-write, and
right, 'cause you have.
And I could really dig in and you know, get with some of the writers who are doing that today, and I'm sure we'd dial in. And but how much of the stuff that I was writing would once again be really what I wanted to say, that I could say that maybe no one else could.
Right.
That same way.
Right. It's uniquely yours and not somebody else's.
Exactly. And I'm writing it for my voice. And
right.
And my voice, the voice that I believe in, is the voice of my heart, the voice, my singing voice, my guitar. I mean, if I write something and I sing it and I play it, then that's a voice that I have that I hope is unlike anyone else. I mean, I'm not one. I have a hard time. Like, if you ask me if it's the best work I've ever done, it's definitely some of the hardest work I've ever done. It's some of the most fruitful work that I've ever done. We enjoyed making this music, and we're not trying to please. We're not trying to please people who are doing it just for the money.
Right.
I have to believe that there are people, conscientious people, who still listen, who want lyrical depth. They want,
oh, yeah.
They want that. And as people are discovering me, and that's the difficult thing, is where did they discover Skip Ewing? Where are they going to have a chance to even know it's out? To even find it on Spotify or Apple or on my website, they have to learn about me. And for other artists, they do that through the medium of radio and a huge amount of promotion from record companies. And record companies, you're going to have to make a lot of money and sell a zillion records. That's not going to happen for me tomorrow, but it's already growing. And I feel like the people who are my fans, the people who are on our socials and who come to the shows, and they may have, found me when I made my first record. Some of them have only just found me. And it's so exciting, man.
Yeah.
We go and play some of this music and people freak out. They just go, I had no idea. This is so awesome. I mean, and that always kind of takes me back, but that's what's happening.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And so I'm busting my tail. I'm trying to be, I'm actually working as hard as I can to offer something that in my own way. It's quality. it has depth, and some of it's fun, dude. Seriously.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Some of it's just flat out fun. Like, I think we were going to talk about Road Dog. And once again, I feel like I'm trying to tell my story for you because that's what you asked for. So jump in if you got a question. But, let's make sure we talk about Road Dogs when we're talking about fun, but also connecting and having something that has depth. Then I want to tell you about that.
Yeah. I'm I'm sitting here listening to you, talk about your songwriting and your songwriting abilities and, people you have written for, and then playing shows on your own and stuff like that. How often do you play, songs you have written for other people that, somebody might know better than, your own solo stuff? And I wrote this song for, such and such, or I wrote this song, and maybe somebody spots it. Like, what's the reaction people give you when that?
Yeah, mate, that's a good question. Yeah, I every show, unless I am asked to play a very short show where I can only play what we've just done. And I have a band called Horsepower 307, and it's some rotating musicians, but they are some of the greatest Nashville musicians there are. I mean, if you're a musician person and like Jenna Fleener and Josh Matheny and Victor Krause, bass player, those are the kind of folks that will come and play. And so we get to make some amazing music. And oftentimes, if I go to play a show, and here's what happened. I don't want to digress too far, but we played a show in, I want to say it was Lubbock, Texas. And I had only two of my band members with me because we were just doing our little acoustic show in a very small theater. And the guy who owns the club we were playing, he came backstage right before we were going to start the show. And he said, Skip, how long is your first set? Well, we don't usually play multiple sets. I mean, we're there to do a show. It's a 90-minute show. We don't break it up.
Right.
It just has continuity. And I tell stories, and I love to connect with an audience. That is part of what I do. I like to breathe. If we're breathing the same air, there's something powerful about it if we allow it.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So I said, man, we only do, one set. That's what we're contracted for. We didn't ever think about that. He goes, and this is what he said. God love him. He said, man, I got to sell popcorn. He did. And I said, I'll tell you, let me think about it. And so just before I went on, I told the guys who were with me, I said, look, I'm going to go open for myself. We don't have an opening act, so I'll go open for myself. Then we'll take this little break, and then we'll come back and we'll play all the new music, you know, with the trio or the band. And that sort of started something. And so I went out and I just walked out and I said, "Hi everybody, I'm Skip Ewing. I'm here to open for myself." And you know, they sort of laughed, and I played pieces because I've had hundreds of songs, you know, recorded, whether they were all hits, but a lot of people are familiar with songs that artists have recorded that, you know, weren't number
right,
ones.
Sure.
But I just play, I don't know, a whole list of hits, part of a bunch of different hits, and tell some stories, and I toss it out to the audience and go, "Man, if you know something I wrote or you came," some people will drive for hundreds of miles to come see me play. And see, this is something that I treasure. Every time that we play, I always thank the people who have come, because it's an effort. As much as they want a good show, it's an effort to come to that show. Babysitters,
yeah.
Gas money, dressing up, out to dinner probably. So much, you know, and then they care. So I want them to have a great show. I want them to, you know, get what they came for. And so I do that. I go out and do all that kind of stuff, just however long it takes. And then I introduce the trio or the band, whichever one we're playing at, and then we play the new music. So it's every show. Every show.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that. You know, I love when I see a, you know, a singer-songwriter or a songwriter, you know, get up on stage and play, you know, songs that they have written for other people or other people have cut, you know, it's, and then you hear their versions of it. You know, sometimes it's, you know, the same. Sometimes there's a little difference, you know, but I love to hear that contrast of, you know, what you're used to and then what maybe the intention was, if that makes sense.
You mean what you're accustomed to from hearing the hit, the way the artist recorded it, and then maybe the way that I would deliver it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's very different. Obviously, it's the same melody and it's the same and the same words, but there are always subtleties.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I enjoy about singing songs that I've written is if it's connected, what I mean is, like, for instance, one of the reasons why I enjoy James Taylor so much, he's an incredible writer and he's an incredible guitar player, but he just is who he is. And for me, I've talked about this a number of times, hopefully, James, and I met James briefly, but he wouldn't know who I was, you know. But it would be nice to spend some time with him just because. I feel like he doesn't filter whatever he's offering. And that's what I liked about him.
Yeah.
And that's an inspiration for me. I don't want to, man, if I'm feeling it, I'm going to sing it that way that night. And every show that we do, it's different. Every show, like the songs will be in a different order. We'll play something that we didn't play at the last show because the audience is different. But man, it's getting to deliver that with everything that's there, everything that's in it, you know? I'll give you an example. And I don't usually get kind of this specific into a lyric, but I'll tell you what I mean about lyrical depth and the things that I love. When Brian White cut "I'm Not Supposed to Love You Anymore," it was number one. I had three number ones in a row. I think I just talked about that with you. It was on hold for Bonnie Raitt. Hmm. And on hold means that they don't want us to pitch it to anyone, and they're planning to record it on their album. And Brian White's producer called me because he's friends with a lot of folks in Nashville. So he's, you know, people are just going to play, publishing companies are going to play songs that they just love for other people.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And he heard it and he called me up and he said, "Skip, you've got to let me cut that song on Brian." I said, "Billy, it's on hold for Bonnie Raitt. That's on my list, man. That's like the short list of people that I want to record. You know, Willie Nelson was one of them. Merle Haggard was one of them. and had several people on my list record stuff, but not Bonnie, you know, not James Taylor. And I'm like, and he said, dude, if you let me have it, we'll have a number one record. I said, you know, you can't guarantee that. He said, no, but I know we can cut a great record on it. Well, my heart is about, they had just done two of my songs. And I went to my publishing company and I said, how can I say no to him when I know that's what he wants? And he's been as good to us as he has. So I still say that song is the best Bonnie Raitt cut I've never gotten. But the reason I bring up Bonnie Raitt is they were in the studio doing Brian's vocal. And Billy Walker Jr., he's also one of the greatest acoustic guitar players, studio guitar players ever, ever, ever. He's played on so many records, so many incredible, iconic records on acoustic. He called me and he said, hey, man, because there's a line in there that says, and Sherry says she's jealous of this freedom that I've found. If she were me, then she would be out on the town. And she says she can't imagine what on earth I'm waiting for. I'm not supposed to love you anymore. And he called me and he said, I know that you were using the name Sherry for Bonnie Raitt because it's a woman. What name do you want us to use with Brian? And what I was able to tell Billy is I said, this is the way I think about things like that. I said, the truth is, Billy, I wrote that as if I was singing it. I never actually thought of it as a woman's song at first. It could be anyone's song.
Yeah.
I said, but the reason I thought that having a woman be that person where he's talking to a woman who says she's jealous of the freedom that he has, and he's close enough to another woman. And I said, Bill, I wrote this for a guy to sing, because if a guy has that kind of a friend who's jealous, you know, of the freedom that he has, and he's not, you know, he's able to maintain a friendship with a woman, this guy has depth. He has believability that he can love that person still that much. I'm not supposed to love you anymore, but I do. And if he really does, then a woman could say that to him, and it wouldn't be like a woman that he would be interested in. It would give him depth of character. And it would be a subtle thing. But when a listener listens to it, they'll feel it. And they use the name Sherry.
Damn.
Those are the kind of things that I just love about songwriting. And I think as deeply as I can. And then I want to offer that, because I offered to an artist and man, a zillion people in the world got to hear that.
Right.
And I still, you know, I still think Bonnie Raitt and I could cut a heck of a duet on that song. that would be amazing. But anyway, so that's a little bit about what I'm talking about.
So speaking of, you know, you writing songs for people and, you know, other artists cutting your songs and stuff like that. In your experience, now, when you're cutting songs or when you're writing songs and, you know, Kenny Rogers picks it up or Kenny Chesney picks it up or Tim McGraw or Diamond, you know, whomever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know going in writing those songs that, hey, you know, Joe Diffie.
Hey, everyone. As always, I wanted to just tell you about our friends over at The Bar Book. The Bar Book is a mobile app designed to eliminate the guesswork when looking for a great drink and introduce users to new brands that have the flavors they love, regardless of price or name recognition. How badass is that, guys? In the same way music sharing apps introduce you to new songs, The Bar Book will give you personalized drink recommendations based on the flavors you love. That's freaking cool. The Bar Book is a veteran-owned brand founded by two U.S. Army veterans, Mike and Dolly, and they have a lot going on with this cool new app, guys. Check it out. We had Mike on the show not too long ago. You can check them out at thebarbook.co. You can follow them on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all at The Bar Book. Rate your favorite beer, spirits, cocktails, and discover new ones that match your flavor profile all on The Bar Book. Go download it. Love having these guys as friends. Check it out. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
might take this song, or, you know, Colin Ray might take this song, or Randy Travis might take this song. Do you know who you're writing for at that, at those times, or are you just writing?
What's crazy is every single artist you just talked about actually did record one of my songs, and that I at least was a part of writing. And I would say that depends. For the most part, especially now, Jim, I care about the listener.
Yeah.
I care about the listener. If I craft a song and it's offered in a skillful way by any artist and it'll reach the listener, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, some artists will go, that's not me at all. Now, of course, if I'm sitting down to write with Kenny Chesney, which Kenny and I wrote together, you know, and his intention was to write songs for his own artistry. So in that sense, you know, it was my job to offer everything I had to offer and to listen to him. So we maintained the way that Kenny Chesney spoke. And what I mean is, like, you know, there are certain things that Kenny's not going to say. They won't be believable coming from him.
Right.
And he, and, you know, Kenny is, you know, and we're good friends. Kenny's a real soul. I mean, he really, and he cares about what he writes, and he's, you know, he's a superstar, but he's still grounded. So if I write with Kenny, then of course I'm thinking about it's Kenny singing.
Right. Okay.
But what's similar about this is that sometimes I'm writing for an actual character. For instance, like that song Petroglyph I told you about, the petroglyph is singing. I know that sounds crazy, but it's really, it sets up a different voice.
Yeah.
To be able to tell a story about like, for instance, the indigenous person 3,000 years ago that scratched a rock carving here in Wyoming, very near my house. There's hundreds of them. They were on an artistic and spiritual journey, probably to, if that's to become, you know, a man in their, you know, in their society, whatever it is, it's an artistic blossoming and a spiritual awakening. And dude, every single one of us is still doing that thousands of years later. We're that connected, and I got to have a rock carving talk about stuff that's happening right now because it's still here looking at the world, right?
Yeah.
So there yeah. You go. All right, I have to have a rock carving talk, but I know it's going to be my voice he's speaking with, and that all has to make sense. It has to be said in a way that I would also say it to a degree. And this is what's so powerful about writing songs, and it's what's powerful about the writers that I appreciate the most. And I'm talking about writers, contemporary writers in country music right now. All the songs that it's pretty prevalent. People are going, ah, it's pop music, it's not country. Well, I don't worry about that. I just listen. And there's some really strong artful crafting of songs going on.
Yeah.
Is it maybe a bit rarer than it used to be? Perhaps because you don't have to write songs like that to have a hit, you know. Right now you don't. It can be poppy. Doesn't have to have depth, and there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. So now, if you ask me that about what I'm doing, I'm not sitting down to write with anyone. I just write, and I'll start 100 ideas, man, easy, for every one song I finish. And I don't really spend the time to finish it unless I think it has some kind of merit. So I write. I complete a lot fewer songs, but I'm getting to write for me to make records like Road to California and Wyoming. And I'm praying that enough people find out about it and like it, that it can be sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's, and that, like you said earlier, like, that's always the hardest part. You know, it's always, you know, it's incredible to me, you know, the avenues and the outlets, you know, artists have now, you know, but I think back, you know, to the days prior to the internet, you know, the way it is now, like, how some of these independent artists, you know, ever did it, you know, It's, you know, you're fortunate now where it's, you know, you can put anything out anywhere and, you know, be able to do it relatively inexpensively, you know, that, like, the marketing side of it, right? Especially if you know how to, you know how to do that sort of thing. But it's amazing. It, you know, it's amazing how different it has changed.
Well, I wouldn't say it's easy or inexpensive at all to have a career where, like I'm saying, where it's sustainable, where right. I do enough shows or sell enough CDs and thumb drives or t-shirts or whatever to be able to look my wife in the eye and say, I got you, honey. We're good.
Right.
There's you know, we got enough to buy hay for this season, for the horses we have. We've got enough for insurance. We're good. You know, if you think about that,
yeah,
where the money comes from, it's a lot. It's right now, the songwriter is just left behind. It always has been. You don't make money as a writer. You just, not unless you're in the thick of it with a big publishing company who's helping you have a lot of songs cut. And yes, there are a few who are really doing that well. Most songwriters aren't. But from an artist standpoint, that's difficult.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be honest with you. It's difficult.
No, let me ask you, you know, speaking to that, right? When you're living in Wyoming, if, you know, you do a run of shows, let's just, for argument's sake, let's say in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when you break it down with expenses and all that, you don't need to talk dollar amounts or anything like that, but, you know, at what point does it have to be worth it financially for you to, you know, to do a run of shows in Texas or somewhere that's, you know, further from home than, you know, maybe you would like to be?
Well, I mean, we tour everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere we possibly can. So, you know, a plane can get us anywhere. For the most part, a plane and an RV can get, you know, I mean, RV, a you know, whatever, a, whatever big enough car we get,
right.
You know, to fit however many musicians we have to go do the show. But when you say, how much does it have to be? Without talking dollar figures, I'll tell you how much it has to be. Because I said this to my wife. I said, I'm not saying show me the money. I'm saying just show me enough money. Do I want to be wealthy like some of the big artists in the world? Well, nobody said I'm not going to be one of those big artists in the world yet. I might be older than some, but I've got something that's unique and that can blossom, that can powerhouse its way into doing stuff that I never I haven't been given the opportunity to do, and that can generate a lot of income.
Yeah.
And with that income, I would be able to take care of a lot of people. And to reinvest that into continuing to offer music to the people who are willing to listen. And that is what I'm about. If we're not doing that, if we're not able to do that, then it's not worth our time and our energies. And if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong too, because we have to have fun. But I can't do it for the money. Remember when we started this, I was talking to you about trying to please other people.
Yeah.
They, so many in the business of music, do it for the money, and that's it.
Yeah.
the money and fame. They like the power. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna say names, but I've been around a lot of them, and it's far few and far between that you find people who really care about what gets out in the world. Check this out, man. I got to write some songs that I believed in what they said, and hundreds, this isn't an exaggeration, but hundreds of millions of people got to hear what I wrote. Unbelievable, if you think about that. So, I don't want to put something out there that I don't believe in for the money. I don't want to put an idea out there that is going to hurt someone's relationship with someone they love. And there are songs that get written about that because people believe in certain thing and it's not really true. And so I am right now in my space, I'm going, man, book us. And again, money is important.
Yeah.
That place we play, they're a business. And COVID hurt so many of those places that I try to be as cool as I can. Would I like to keep the ticket price down? Yes. But I still have to buy plane tickets. And I have to rent a car, put gas in the car, and pay the musicians something fair so that their families are cared for. Sometimes that leaves me very little left at the space that I'm at. But I know one thing about my heart and one thing about my journey is that it's always going to be that. And at this point, I'm always going to be proud of however we handled that. Everybody's cared for. That's what matters. The audience, the band, me, every single human in the mix, and four leggers too, if they're part of it, you know, but that's what it takes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like I'm really pleasantly surprised to hear you say that because I think it's honest. I think it's, you know, it's exactly what you mean. And not a lot of people are willing to admit that. And I love that. You know, I love that you have no problem saying, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, everything you just mentioned is what's important. And I think it's incredible what you're doing. I think it's incredible what you've done. You know, I know for me, I'm excited for this new record that's coming out. You know, it's great to hear new music, you know, and it's always great to hear new music that means something.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because when we flip-flop it too, it's like the people that really matter are the people who are listening.
Yeah.
The people who find that their lives connect to a song I wrote. This is what I say. Someone will come up to me. I go out after every concert that I play as much as possible. There are some situations where it's not possible to go out. But anytime that I can, I will try to go out and meet and stay however long I have to do to sign autographs, and sometimes it's a long time. But I love it because that's what matters. And someone will come up to me and they'll say, Skip, you like wrote one of my most favorite songs ever. And they'll say something like, I know you hear this all the time, but you really did. And every time, like every single time, I'll look at them and go, okay, I'm not going to say that somebody hasn't told me I wrote their favorite song, or I wrote a song that's important for them, or I got played at their wedding, but I've never heard that from you. And that is what matters. I can tell you that 100 million people listened to my song, but it's different to think that 100 million people, individuals, heard my song, and that some of them could have been profoundly moved.
Yeah.
And if there were, imagine this, man. I sat in a room and poured my heart out as best as I could. And, you know, and when we say that, I'm not saying every song is sad or the most powerful in the world. Powerful can be fun, you know?
Sure.
But still, that's what I did, in hopes that I would be able to make that connection, that I would be able to write something that connected with another human where we're similar, where we're the same somehow. And if I did that, that's amazing. That's amazing. And it's that person. It's that person. And I think about that more than I ever have, especially after working with horses. I'll circle back to let you have a feel for something. For instance, when I talk about my albums or I talk about music that I've made, sometimes I have to say I wrote a song, because that's truly something that I did by myself. But in almost everything else, I don't say I have a new album coming out. I say we have a new album coming out.
Yep. So I think I would be totally remiss if I didn't mention our friends over at 10thWhiskey.com. That's 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company. They're out of Vail, Colorado. Great, great friends of ours. We don't like bourbon here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, and they make the absolute best bourbon I've ever tasted in my entire life. And I'm not saying that because they've been great to us. They have the best bourbon, the best rye I've ever tasted in my entire life. So check them out, 10thWhiskey.com. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey Podcast sent you. Cheers. Now we're going to thank our friends on the North Shore, the Porch Southern Fair and Juke Joint. Our buddy Jonathan Post is the head chef and owner of The Porch. They are at 175 Rivers Edge Drive, right in Medford, Massachusetts. Don't want to miss this place. They have some of the best food in the region. Jonathan has brought his Nashville roots here to New England with the food, with the hospitality, and most of all, the music. Check them out, theporchsouthern.com.
Of course. I say we have a tour. I say we every time I can, because it's always all of the elements that come together to make it to make it that album, to make it that piece of music. And I treasure every single element, including and especially including my audience, the people who, again, I get to make it for, and who spend their time, they spend the breaths of their life listening to my music. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I can only imagine, you know, that's going to be something that's, no matter how long you do it for, you know, that portion of it, the fan aspect of it, that's going to be mind blowing at times.
You know, I did an interview recently, an interview and a performance for American Songwriter, and they wrote me up, and you know, it's really, I was honored, man. They did a really nice write up about my approach to writing and with an awesome picture my wife took, and I went, honey, check it out. You have a full page picture that you shot in American Songwriter. Even that is we. And I got to tell some stories that they put out on videos, but I did a performance. I think Josh Matheny, who's the dobro player that plays with me a lot, one of the best, again, like one of the finest players in all the world. And I get to play with him, and I treasure that. And we played Windmill, which is one of the songs coming up from the album, and that song for me is really. For me is metaphorically deep, and it is genuinely one of my favorite songs I've ever written, because I love to sing it, I love to share it, I love what it's about, because I think everyone has been the wind and been the windmill when it comes to love. You'll have to listen to the song to know what I mean. But someone on the YouTube, you know how you, if you go and watch the YouTube for American Songwriter, people can leave comments, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember the whole comment. It's not someone I know. I don't know what this person does, but they said some incredible things about what I do, and said he's simply the best at what he does. And it was like, that's like one of those things where you go, I've heard some things like that. I haven't heard it from you. And the fact that anyone could say that about me, man, I'm floored. I'm yeah. honored. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Well, Skip, you know, you're you know, you're doing it, and you're doing it the way you want to do it, and I love that. You know, I think that's my favorite thing. And when I see artists or hear artist stories where, you know, they're doing it the way they want to, you're writing songs the way you want to write them. You're telling the stories you want to tell. You know, and I think that's really, you know, kind of a lost art form in and of itself.
Maybe. I think there are some, you know, some artists who they have the ability to write for mainstream radio, for instance, and they are looking to write those songs in order to continue their career at that level on the radio.
Sure.
As things grow for me, if I have the opportunity to have things on the radio, can I endeavor to write something that will play on the radio that still has all of the elements we just talked about? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if it compromises what we're offering for that, then I won't feel authentic. You know, I won't feel honest. And check this out. Here's what's really interesting, right? Lainey Wilson, I mean, Entertainer of the Year right now, and Apple Music got together and they discovered about 6 songs Apple did in Nashville that they called hidden gems. One of them was a song I wrote with Dean Dillon called I Would If I Could. And so Lainey Wilson said she loved it. Even Lainey said that I was one of the best songwriters ever. And she recorded the song for Apple Music's, I think it's called Lost and Found. It's a special project they have. And she did a beautiful job on it. And they put my demo out on it as well. Well, this song, Dean and I wrote, like, I want to say in the late 90s, you know, like 25 years ago. And yet she recorded it. And here's the crazy thing. Ernest heard it. And he said, oh, man, I've got to record this. I haven't ever met Ernest or Lainey. I've sent them, tried to send them messages, but I haven't ever met them to express my appreciation. But so Ernest called Lainey and said, Lainey, come sing this song with me. I'm going to cut it on my album, too. We'll sing it as a duet. So that's coming out on April 12th on Ernest's new album with him and Lainey. And yet it's a song I wrote that long ago. And someone would say it still has relevance now. That makes me joyous.
Yeah.
If we can write songs that someone will think has excellence to it, was powerfully written, was skillfully written, and they want to spend their time and energies and money recording that song. And boy, what I've heard, it's beautifully done. What they cut. I haven't heard the whole thing. I've only heard a piece of it. But I mean, come on, man. That's amazing. And that gives me hope to go, oh, wait a second. I'm still writing songs that are sometimes way country as you can think. And at the same time, I'm writing things that take musical chances and lyrical chances in hopes that people will listen.
Yeah, you know, and that's honestly, I think that's a great way to, you know, tie up this episode where, you know, everything, you know, really is full circle. You know, and nothing you do now or nothing you did then, you know, things you write 25, 30 years ago doesn't mean, you know, that's it. It's over for those things, you know, and you're seeing that now. And things that you write now or put out now doesn't mean that they're, you know, they have a short shelf life. You know, the music is, you know, forever. And, you know, the shelf life on music and on songs and artistry, you know, it's never ending.
It can be, it can be. I think some pieces do weather the test of time. And you hope that you can write that way and I do endeavor to do that. I couldn't think that, you know, everything I write is going to weather all that time, but I can aspire to write the best I can so that when you listen to it later, you go, man, that was still really skillfully written. I get it, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're wanting to wrap this up, that's great. But I got to tell you, man, we should have another talk.
Yeah, absolutely. We really should. Absolutely. Yeah. I would love to. And hell, honestly, if I didn't have, you know, the day from hell today on this Monday, and with the way my weekend was, like, nonstop, I could probably talk to you for hours and hours and hours going on.
Well, dude, we'll talk. We should talk again. And I will say, though, just I was touching on Road Dogg, and we were talking about the fun of it. And this is an example of what I mean. I had a sort of a bluegrassy riff, on the guitar that I just really liked. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of memorable. I like that. I want to do something with that and see. And I was writing at someone else's house, this little lonesome house where I could just be by myself and have my guitars out everywhere and I wouldn't bother anybody. And I could do it for hours and be gone as long as I wanted to. And then just call my wife and go, okay, I'm headed home. And I had this riff. It was part of what I was doing long before I wrote this record. And I walked out to my truck. Now, you have to understand, our road is like is really unpaved, like 8 miles of unpaved road off the main highway all the way back. It beats the crap out of your truck. I like to say, if your window's not cracked, you don't actually live here. You know, and I looked in my truck as I walked out and I went, I don't think there's a window in my truck that doesn't have smudges from a dog's nose. And there's white hair because our first dog that we got was, his name is Shotgun. He's a Pyrenees Australian Shepherd mix. And he's amazing, but he's also like 100+ pounds and just, you know, and thinks he's a puppy. 100 pounds of puppy is a lot.
Yeah.
And I saw all this and I went, yes, it's kind of a mess that I have to continually clean up, but I love it. I literally love it. I love having my dog. I love what he gives to my life, what he gives to our life, you know, because Linda and I now have two dogs, him and Holly. But as I was driving home, I was thinking of that bluegrass riff I wrote, and I went, there's not a real dog lover in the world who puts their dog in their car that doesn't have hair, paw prints, hair on their clothes, and wet nose smudges on the windows, right? So this is another place, as fun as it is, as up tempo and as straight out fun, it's a place where we're similarly human and people get it. And I took a chance and did that. And for instance, that's one of the songs on the new record. In fact, we put it out as a single for Texas Regional Radio to start, and did this video where people sent us, I mean, hundreds of different people sent us hundreds of photos to incorporate into the YouTube video because they enjoyed that and their dogs are in the video. And that makes me smile just talking about it.
Yeah.
Because I think, man, if I can connect, because I have a dog that's so cool and other people have a dog that's so cool. Once again, there we are. Similarly human, getting together to have some moments that are unique and meaningful, especially when we play live. And that's what I'm about. And I appreciate you giving me any opportunity to talk about it.
Oh man, anytime. I love, like I said, I love hearing stories and I love shooting the breeze, man. It's a lot of fun for me. So I appreciate you taking your time. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's 100 other things you could be doing on a Monday, but you were nice enough and sweet enough to take the time to come on and talk to me. So I appreciate that more than you'll ever know.
Yeah, man. It's part of what I have to do, but it's also part of what I love to do. You just gave me a chance to speak to some folks when they're listening who might discover the new music that Skip Ewing is doing.
Right.
And that's a, that, that's a blessing. It won't happen without that. It won't continue to happen. Believe me, it's happening, but it, the, you know, the more people discover different ways to discover that, wait, who is this guy? You know,
yeah,
I should go listen. I should go on Spotify. I should go on Apple, or, and also I should listen to Jim's podcast again, because he has some, you know, good interviews.
That's right. That's right. Just keep listening.
There you go.
And well,
there you go.
Well, Skip, again, thank you so much. And, you know, like I said, if this weekend and this, the last 7 days hadn't kicked my ass the way they have, we would be, we would continue talking until I probably fell asleep because I'm on the East Coast.
Well, and,
you know.
Well, I won't ask you publicly what happened, but I'm sorry if
you,
if you had a difficult time, and I hope you know some ways to breathe your way through it, or rest your way through it, or celebrate your way through it, whatever it is that works for you. And let's do this again.
Yeah, for sure, man. I greatly appreciate you, like I said, and you know, we'll figure out a time to do this sooner rather than later. Sure.
Yeah, man. That sounds great.
Sounds good.
Thank
to you.
Too.
You're welcome, Skip. Thanks a lot.
Be well.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Our conversation with Skip. Skip, thank you again so much for coming on the show. I cannot wait to do part two with you here, because I think we could have another hour and 20-minute conversation about all kinds of other shit that you've done that just is mind-blowing. So thank you again for your time, Skip. He's got new music coming out this week, so go check it out. And that's it, guys. Until next time, you know, keep those boots on the ground and the whiskey in the glass. And as always, you know, here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, it's all about real people, real stories, real country. Again, thank you so much for being here. Check out our socials, Boots and Whiskey Podcast. Website, bootsandwhiskeyentertainment.com. Why did we do that? Why did we make it? I don't remember. Anyway, not important. Thank you all so much for being here, and we will see you next week with a new episode. I honestly cannot remember who it is. I know it's recorded. I know I have to put it together. I just forget who it is. So thanks, guys, and we will see you next week. Enjoy your week. Cheers.